A Tory was Mr. Chadbert of the backbone. None so bitter against the little German as he, and surely none had looked forward more eagerly to the advent of the gallant Charles Edward. If he confined his patriotism to drinking success to Prince Charlie's campaign, who shall blame him? And if, when sundry Whig gentlemen halted at the Chequers on their way to the coast, and, calling for a bottle of Rhenish, bade him toss down a glass himself with a health to His Majesty, again, who shall blame Mr. Chadber for obeying? What was a health, one way or another, when you had rendered active service to two of His Stuart Highness's adherents? It was Mr. Chadber's boast, uttered only to his admiring Tory neighbours, that he had at the risk of his own life given shelter to two fugitives of the disastrous 45 who had come so far out of their way as quiet Fallowfield. That no one had set eyes on either of the men was no reason for doubting an honest landlord's word, but no one would have thought of doubting any statement that Mr. Chadber might make. Mine host of the Chequers was a great personage in the town, being able both to read and to write, and having once, when young, travelled as far north as London town, staying there for 10 days and setting eyes on no less a person than the great Duke of Marlborough himself when that gentleman was riding along the Strand on his way to St. James's. Also, it was a not-to-be-ignored fact that Mr. Chadber's home-brewed ale was far superior to that sold by the landlord of the rival inn at the other end of the village. Altogether, he was a most important character, and no one was more aware of his importance than his worthy self. To gentlemen born, whom he protested he could distinguish at a glance, he was almost obsequiously polite. But on clerks and underlings, and men who bore no signs of affluence about their persons, he wasted none of his deference. Thus it was that, when a little green-clad lawyer alighted one day from the mail coach and entered the coffee-room at the Chequers, he was received with pomposity and scarce veiled condescension. He was nervous, it seemed, and more than a little worried. He offended Mr. Chadber at the outset when he insinuated that he was come to meet a gentleman who might perhaps be rather shabbily clothed, rather short of purse, and even of rather unsavoury repute. Very severely did Mr. Chadber give him to understand that guests of that description were entirely unknown at the Chequers. There was an air of mystery about the lawyer, and it appeared almost as though he were striving to probe mine host. Mr. Chadber bridled a little and became aloof and haughty. When the lawyer dared openly to ask if he had had any dealings with highwaymen of late, he was properly and thoroughly affronted. The lawyer became suddenly more at ease. He eyed Mr. Chadber speculatively, holding a pinch of snuff to one thin nostril. "Perhaps you have staying here a certain Sir Anthony Ferndale?" he hazarded. The gentle air of injury fell from Mr. Chadber. Certainly he had, and come only yesterday, a purpose to meet his solicitor. The lawyer nodded. "I am he. Be so good as to apprise Sir Anthony of my arrival." Mr. Chadber bowed exceeding low and implored the lawyer not to remain in the draughty coffee-room. Sir Anthony would never forgive him, and he allowed his solicitor to await him there. Would he not come to Sir Anthony's private parlour? The very faintest of smiles creased the lawyer's thin face as he walked along the passage in Mr. Chadber's wake. He was ushered into a low-ceilinged, pleasant chamber looking out onto the quiet street and left alone what time Mr. Chadber went in search of Sir Anthony. The room was panelled and ceilinged in oak, with blue curtains to the windows and blue cushions on the high-backed settle by the fire. A table stood in the centre of the floor, with a white tablecloth thereon and places laid for two. Another smaller table stood by the fireplace, together with a chair and a stool. The lawyer took silent stock of his surroundings and reflected grimly on the landlord's sudden change of front. It would appear that Sir Anthony was a gentleman of some standing at the Chequers. Yet the little man was plainly unhappy, and fell to pacing to and fro, his chin sunk low on his breast and his hands clasped behind his back. He was come to seek the disgraced son of an earl, and he was afraid of what he might find. 6 years ago, Lord John Carstairs, eldest son of the Earl of Wyncham, had gone with his brother, the Honourable Richard, to a card party, and had returned a dishonoured man. That Jack Carstairs...